प्रश्नोत्तरे शत श्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। नामाचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा। नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमम् देवं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया। भगवतीत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 21 7, 6, 7, and 7, 8, and 9. विभक्तस्य महीपते विभक्तं व्यभजत् तस्मै वृषलाय हरिं स्मरम्। अथान्यो भोक्षमाणस्य विभक्तस्य महीपते विभक्तं व्यभजत् तस्मै वृषलाय हरिं स्मरम्। अथान्यो भोक्षमाणस्य विभक्तस्य महीपते विभक्तं व्यभजत् तस्मै वृषलाय हरिं स्मरन्। प्लीज रिपीट। Ladies, please. Athanya bhokshamanas. Atha, thereafter, anyaha, another guest, bhokshamanasya, who was just about to eat, vibhaktasya, after setting aside the share for the family, mahipate, of the king, vibhaktam, the food allotted for the family, vyabhajat, he divided and distributed, tasmai, unto him, vrishalaya, unto a shudra, harim, the supreme personality of Godhead, smaran, remembering. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thereafter, having divided the remaining food with his relatives, Rantideva was just about to eat his own share when a Shudra guest arrived. Seeing the Shudra in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, King Rantideva gave him also a share of the food. Purport. Because King Rantideva saw everyone as part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he never distinguished between the Brahmana and the Shudra, the poor and the rich. Such equal vision is called Samadarshinaha, Pandita Samadarshinaha. One has actually realized that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in everyone's heart, and that every living being is part of the Lord, does not make any distinction between the Brahmana and the Shudra, the poor, Daridra, or the rich, Dhani. Such a person sees all living beings equally and treats them equally without discrimination. Text 8. Yate Shudratam Anyogat Atithishwabhira Vrataha Rajan Mediyatamannam Sangaraya Bhubukshate. When the Shudra went away, another guest arrived, surrounded by dogs, and said, O King, I and my company of dogs are very hungry. Please give us something to eat. Sa adritavyashtam yad bahumana puraskrutam tatcha dattva namaschakre shvabhaya shvapataye vibhu. With great respect, King Rantideva offered the balance of the food to the dogs and the master of the dogs who had come as guests. The king offered them all respects and obeisances. So 8 and 9. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gora Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Are you all aware of the full story of Rantideva? No? Because when you read verse by verse, you miss sort of the big picture here. So if you allow me, I'll give you the big picture and then parts will make sense. King Rantidev is one of the descendants of the Moon dynasty. And when Shukadeva Goswami is narrating, you know, the genealogy, he stops at Rantideva's story. He narrates it because it's very, very significant and awe-inspiring. So what happened is, King Rantideva, although a very pious king, his kingdom was afflicted by famine. So he consulted with his brahmanas, and they said, well, because of some previous mistakes within the dynasty, Adi Daivika Klesha, this is something you have to bear. So he asked them, is there a countermeasure? He said, well, the king is considered to be the father of the entire kingdom. So whatever austerity the king earns, then the fruits of that austerity are passed on to the followers. And whatever impiety the king earns, the fruits are also passed on to the followers. Ideally it is 1/6, everything goes. So he decided to fast for 48 days. Now, any one of us who has fasted, we know. Fasting for one day for Janmashtami is a big task. Fasting for 2 days is still, some people can do it. And some people fast because they are unhealthy. So they just cannot digest food. So their digestive fire becomes very weak because of disease. So you're not feeling hungry or thirsty. But in a perfectly healthy person who's very strong, he's a Kshatriya, who's very, very strong, able-bodied, and Kshatriyas are not like, please give me, you know, one cup of rice and two chapatis. They don't eat like that. They eat mega quantities because they have the power to digest such food. And their activities, their abilities, their bodies are like that. You never find Kshatriyas who eat, you know, just a little bit. Brahmanas eat very little. Kshatriyas are not meant to eat little because they need a lot of high energy, high calorific diet. That's why it's called Rajbhog in one sense, which is the food very fit for kings. It's very, very opulent, rich. So for a person who has very powerful digestive fire and is used to eating very opulently, who decides to fast for 48 days, you can imagine the kind of strength, the determination and the ability to tolerate hunger. So that's one consideration. Another is, it is said that a person, however strong they may be mentally, when two things happen, then their weakness begins to show. One is when they are thirsty, and another is when they are hungry. Hunger and thirst are urges that are extremely difficult to control. Of course, we know Parikshit Maharaj as a great king, as a Mahabhagavata. What he did was sort of orchestrated by the Lord, we agree. But in the context of thirst, he became very thirsty, and it was agreed that the sage did not pay attention to him. Or in the Mahabharata, when all the Pandavas are very thirsty, Yudhishthir Maharaj sends them, please go look for water. He actually sends Sahadeva first. And so Sahadeva comes looking for a body of water and finds a very beautiful pond with fresh water. So he's about to drink when a yaksha, this voice says, oh, you cannot drink from this lake belongs to me. And when he looks up, he sees a yaksha there. He says, yaksha, I am very, very thirsty. We've been walking in the forest. The heat is very scorching. Our tongues are parched. We need some water. No, not until you answer my questions. So Sahadeva said, let me drink some water. I'll answer all your questions. No, first you answer my questions. Sahadeva said, I cannot tolerate my thirst. I will die. I said, if you drink, you will die. He said, I'm very powerful, I mean, no one's going to burn. He drank some water and he died. So then Nakula was sent, same thing. Arjuna was sent, same thing. Bhima. And Yudhishthira Maharaj came, and when the yaksha said, all your brothers have died because they have not answered my questions. Can you answer my questions? So when someone is very thirsty, at least from our condition, we can relate to one degree. And if there is an impediment in our fulfilling our thirst, the first sign, the first symptom that we show is irritability. We're very short, we're very angry because I'm thirsty, let me first drink water, then I'll talk to you, right? So Yudhishthira Maharaj, when he was tested, he said, "Oh, I'm thirsty like anything, I'm about to collapse and die. Yes, can you please answer questions?" And he was asked 100 questions, not one or two. And 100 questions all in puzzle form. What is the most wonderful thing in this world? He could have said, "The Taj Mahal, can I drink some water?" And the Yaksha won't accept stupid answers. Yeah? So Yudhishthira Maharaj had to give the most brilliant answers. Ahani, ahani, bhutani, gacchanti, yamalayam. He says again and again, people are dying. He says, shesham icchanti stava. He says, so I think nothing will happen to me. That's the most wonderful thing in this world. Oh, excellent. Another question. Another went on asking 100 questions. And then allowed him to drink water. So like this, when a person is hungry or thirsty, that is when whatever is deep inside, that little negative quality will come out for sure. And when a person is deprived of food or water, then the dark side of their character will show up. Either if they don't like it, or they don't have enough, or they're not given, or they're deprived, whatever. So Rantidev, who's fasting for 48 days, although he's very strong, powerful, digestive fire is super, for 48 days he's been fasting simply for benefiting his kingdom, his people, all the living entities, you know, because without water, everyone's dying. So at that moment, the demigods want to test him. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, they want to test him and bring out his glory. So the actual thing is, they all come in disguises. So that's sort of the punchline here. But they come to test him. So 48 days later, the king, the granary is all pretty much exhausted. There's only little left for the king to break his fast. As soon as he sits down, a Brahmin comes. "Oh, my dear king, I'm very hungry." So Rantidev takes a portion of that food and gives it to the Brahmana. "Please eat." And now everyone in the kingdom, his soldiers, his family, they want him to break the fast. So he sits down again. So in today's verse, he says, "Atha anyaha." Then another guest shows up. Bhakshamanasya. So he's Bhakshamana, says one who sit down, bhokta, right? So they're all from the root word bhuk. So bhokta manasya means he just sat down to eat. If you knew ahead of time someone else is coming, that's a different thing. But when you just sit down to eat after breaking the fast, already you've given half the share to the Brahmin, you're about to eat, then a Shudra shows up. Now someone might say, "He's a Shudra. Get him out. Brahmanas are important. Shudras are not important." The king said, "Oh, please come." So he says, so it's an alliteration. If any of you is interested in poetry or whatever, the Bhagavatam is poetic, but it's also beautiful. So the word bhakta or bhukta is all decorated in different ways, and they have different meanings. So he says, bhukshamanasya vibhaktasya. Then vibhaktam vibhajat. So the food that was reserved for the family, who's also fasting with him, when the Shudra came, the king said, "Oh, you're very hungry? Please." And whatever was kept for the family, he gave it away. With hunger and thirst, his body was shivering and quivering because he's become very weak. And is described for him, Vrishalaya. Vrishalaya is that Shudra. Vrishalaya means Shudra. Vrishalaya Harim Smaram. He is the living example, the epitome of, or epitome of that verse, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavihastini Shuni Chaiva Shapakecha Pandita Samadarshana. Samadarshana, that he saw the supreme living being, the Paramatma, in the heart of the Shudra and in the heart of the Brahmin. So when they came for food, he didn't make a distinction. He offered them both, because they're both guided by Super Soul. They both have Paramatma residing in their hearts. Just the body is different. So he offered him that food. Now in this verse from Bhagavad Gita, which was Vidya Vinaya Sampanna, which was I think Saturday's verse, have you observed the, I'm sure you have, the peculiarity in that verse? There are some very interesting elements in that verse. First of all, in the first line of Bhagavad Gita 5:18, it says, Vidya Vinaya Sampanna. Sampanna means one who is decorated with, or one who is endowed with. Vidya, knowledge. But knowledge, one who is endowed with knowledge, has a unique characteristic. It's called Vinaya. Vinaya means gentle or humble. So a proper sign that someone is decorated with knowledge is that they're gentle. But someone who uses knowledge as a power tactic, then they are not sampanna. The knowledge, vidya is not there. And they may have jnana, but vidya is not there. So vidya vinaya sampanna. So knowledge has, the presence of knowledge in someone has a symptom, and that symptom is gentleness or humility. He says, Brahmane gavi hastini shuni chaiva shvapakecha. So you, if in human society, if you take the spectrum, on the one end of the spectrum are the highest human beings, the Brahmanas. And on the other end of the spectrum are the lowest human beings. They are called the Shvapakas, the dog eaters, who are much lower than the Shudras. In fact, compared to Shvapakas, the dog eaters, Shudras are considered very high class society. So generally the Mahabhagavatas are considered the fifth class. Fifth class basically means outside Varnashram. Sometimes the Chandalas are also called the fifth category. So one Srila Prabhupada was explaining like this, and someone asked him, Prabhupada, which class are you? He said, I am 10th class. It's Prabhupada's humility of expressing himself. But Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, and then Panchama, the fifth class is basically the Chandalas. So this verse Krishna says, Brahmana and Shvapaka. So a Pandita's view is of equality across the spectrum. That the Brahmanas are the most valuable and the most contributing members to society, because they give vision, guidance, knowledge, they're the representatives of Vishnu, they accept from people on behalf of Vishnu. So they're a very important function. They're the head of the society. Then there are the arms and the belly and the legs. And then there is the fifth, which basically has no role. There's Shvapakas, dog eaters, they says. They have no role. Yet, the Pandita will see them also as very valuable, because Paramatma exists in them also. So this verse covers the entire spectrum in terms of human beings. Then Krishna uses the words cow, elephant and dogs. Right? Gavi, Hastini and Shva. Gavi, Hastini, Shuni. Shuni is dog. Shva or Shuni. Why these three animals? Of all the animals that could be talked about, why are these three animals spoken about? So the cows, of course we know the significance, that without cows, there is no Vedic society. Without cows, there is no agriculture. There is no milk, which means no ghee, which means no yajna. And without the bull, there is no farming, so there is no grain. And without grain, you cannot perform yajna. So cow, very, very, very significant. Elephants are beasts of strength. They're used in wars, they're used for deployment, for muscle, they're like the bulldozers. So without these bulldozers, you cannot build cities, you cannot build villages, you cannot build anything, roads. You need to clear out all the trees and foliage to be able to do some construction work. Right? Whenever you have to build a house or build something, it's all jungle land, you have to cut down some trees. It's not like they have a chainsaw. The elephants would help move and clear this area. The picture I have in mind is when Bharata wants to go to meet Lord Ram in Chitrakut. He's in a hurry. He wants to go quickly because Lord Ram might leave Chitrakut and go. So in that rush, he has to create a road by which the entire army can very quickly reach Chitrakut. So he deploys thousands of elephants to clear all the foliage, the trees, the shrubbery, so that the engineers can lay a road. Because those big logs have to be moved. So cow is very, very important in one function, and the elephant is very important in another function. You don't take cows into war, you take elephants into. You sit on top of them and you become invincible. You have a great vantage point from which you can throw a spear or shoot an arrow. Then shwa, dogs. Dogs are considered like very moochy. Of course, they sleep on people's beds and lick their face, and that's a whole different thing. But dogs are considered moochy in society because they are almost like scavengers. Like the crows, you know, the scavengers. If there is a roadkill, the dog will take care of it. So just as in human society there is a spectrum, in animal kingdom there is a spectrum. And everyone has value, it's just that they do different functions. So a pandita does not shun the dog while glorifying the cow. That's the greatness of this verse, that Krishna gives the full spectrum from this end to that end, both in human and animal kingdom. And saying that such a person who can see through the entire spectrum the presence of Paramatma and therefore sees them with equal vision is a actually learned person. So Rantidev is compared to such a pandita. He is, because now Shudra has come and he has offered his food to him. So then he sits down. As soon as he sits down, another guest shows up. Oh my dear king, can you imagine what accessibility they have to the king, that anyone can just show up? I said, oh my dear king, my dogs and I are very, very thirsty. Are hungry. Please give us something. So Rantidev did not say, I am the king. If I die, my kingdom will get completely destroyed. He said, oh, you are a chandala. So it goes from Brahmin to Shudra to chandala. Oh yeah. He gave his food to the dogs. Instead of he eating and his family eating, he gave it to the dogs. And he said, and he didn't give it with anger or disgust, or he didn't give it with, oh man, these people constantly, you know, eyeing my food. He says, sa adritya, that's the verse number 9. Sa adritya, adritya is with great respect. With both his hands, he offered the food to the dogs and the chandala. No disgust, no anger, no exasperation, irritability, nothing. With great respect. And he says, Bahumana Puraskritam. Mana means to respect, right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told us, Amalina Manadena. So Bahumana Puraskritam means offering him all respects, made the chandala sit down, made the dogs sit down, and offered whatever food he had left to them. It says, Shwabhaya, Shwapataye Vibhu. Vibhu, the king, not only offered all of his food to the chandala and his dogs, but then offered them all respects and obeisances. He is a very special king, a very extraordinary personality who can go to the extreme of showing respect. And he is hungry, he is thirsty. In verse 10 and 11, then he says, Paniya Matra Uchesham. Now all that was left was some water. For 48 days of fasting and everything going away right from, literally from his lips. So at that time, it says thereafter only drinking water was there enough to satisfy one person. And as the king was about to drink it, a chandala appeared. And he says, O king, although I am low born, please give me some water to drink. And Ranti Deva didn't say, come on, even I have given everything away, I have nothing to drink. How can we share half? Let me drink first and then you can drink. Just gave him the water and said, please drink. So Bhagavatam, now we might wonder, when will I ever be tested like this? The answer is no. So we don't have to worry too much. Thankfully it's Ranti Deva and he's in the book. But the reason is, Bhagavatam is a collection of extreme stories and events. And the reason extreme events make it into the book is because only in extremes does the real character of a person show up. In moderate or easy situations, character doesn't show up. Whatever shows up is only superficial. So now you see, take anything. Suppose you have to get gold from the ore. Usually gold is mixed with other chemicals, mostly either in some oxidized form or some other alloy form. To separate the pure gold from all the other alloys and mixtures, you can't just take the gold and you can't just take gold and put it on a gas stove and wait for the gold to show up. It doesn't separate. You have to put the gold ore in extremely high temperatures, and in those extremely high temperatures all the alloys break down and gold separates. Or if you have a block of steel that needs to be rolled into a sheet, you can't tap it. You have to put very, very high pressure. Usually there are these big machines that have so much hydraulic pressure that they push that block of steel into a thin sheet. So they're all extremes. Such kind of pressure is not available at home. You cannot do it. When you make paneer. So that's one example. It's not extreme, but you get the idea. When you make paneer, you put the block, you put something else, you put a whole pot of water, fill it with water, and subject the paneer to all that weight. So that all that weight goes away. And what you're left with is paneer. That's firm, so it's usable. So when you want iron, steel, gold, silver, whatever it is, it has to be subjected to some very extreme temperatures and pressures so that the actual precious metal will show up. Until then you won't get it. So for that matter, Bhagavatam shows that how these persons in these very extreme conditions, their super character shows up. So unless these personalities, therefore in Bhagavatam and in all the great scriptures and the lives of great persons, you see very extreme situations. And in those extreme situations, these persons shine. They shine like anything. Because they understand. It shows their faith in Krishna, their complete dedication to Krishna, such that regardless of what situation they are put in, they will never break. And this is Krishna's way of demonstrating to the world. Because otherwise, Rantidev's name would be another name in that list of genealogy. Oh, such and such, Rantidev, move on. But Krishna highlights certain personalities so that we get to see, wow, what kind of kings they were, what kind of persons they were. And in this line, Lord Krishna chose to appear. So we have great respect and honor, and these personalities become the emblem of examples that we can try to follow or emulate to the degree that we can. So for Rantidev, that's the extreme. For us, the extreme may be something else, to whatever degree it seems extreme. So within that, we are meant to exhibit these Vaishnava qualities of equality, samadarshana, being able to tolerate the urges of hunger, thirst. Any questions, comments or thoughts? I'm sorry, my voice is like the most hypnotic voice this morning. It's like this monotone that is so easy to put anyone to sleep. I can give you this. I don't know where the other mic is. We had a problem last night also to find it. You have a question, Giridhari? Yeah.
I have a few questions. One, I'm wondering, sometimes I like go back and forth between trying to cut back on how much I'm eating. Right. But then oftentimes it goes like to the other side of like not really being nourishing and not being able to be like energized enough. So it's like not really productive. It seems like there's like a misconception of like that, of like being austere, and then you really just aren't very productive or like can't really do your service. So I'm wondering like how, but then it's like it's really a fine line between then like just like overeating, because we hear like you conquer sleep by like eating just the right amount. So I'm wondering if like you have like understanding of how to like not overeat but not undereat at the same time.
This is the toughest question I ever faced in my Krishna consciousness. And whatever answer I'll give you will be severely hypocritical. Okay? Because I have the same difficulty. So, to whatever degree I can share. Let's talk in principle first. Okay? Then I'll share some personal example if it helps. The principle Srila Prabhupada gave is, at least for the young devotees like us, the young in Krishna consciousness, is that our food intake has to match our physical activity. Then there's no problem. And so Prabhupada said, if someone's eating like an elephant, if they work like an elephant, no problem. Elephant can digest massive amounts of food. No problem. Quantity is not an issue. So whatever is our physical activity, our food intake must match the physical activity. That's one. Second, I've come to appreciate that whatever we eat, if we eat happily, then we digest much better. If we eat with guilt or over-analysis, then the digestive fire is not the same. If you eat happily, and eat happily is not that eat gluttonously, that's not the point. Eat happily is you eat relishably. And then it matches with the appropriate physical activity. Then food and sleep are not a problem. So if we analyze in general, we find that in our equation of one side food intake, on the other side physical activity, we'll find that the equation is imbalanced. Sometimes there is so much physical activity, if at all, there's not enough nourishment. But in Kishore Kishori's temple, that's usually never the case, that there's not enough nourishment. It's probably one of the most opulent temples in the whole of the world in terms of what's dished out. This is perhaps the only temple where everyone eats what Kishore Kishori eats. Because in all other temples, the deities eat something else and the devotees eat something completely different. Regardless of what temple I've visited, I won't say all temples, but many temples, what the deities eat and what the devotees eat are very different. Only in New Sevakunj Dham, what they eat is what we eat. Rajbhog. But the point is, so the equation gets imbalanced where food intake and matching physical activity is necessary. Physical and mental too. The mental part is, you eat happily. I found that when I become overly analytical of what I'm eating, I don't digest it well. And that doesn't mean you become reckless. So I have to keep disclaiming the part. Otherwise, someone will say, well, he said this. But I also have to make sure that we assume that it doesn't mean you're reckless in what you eat. Eat happily, and the word is enjoy. Enjoy, because in the Hare Krishna movement, the word enjoy is like this very bad word. We have this very negative connotation to the food. Enjoy. Oh, he's talking about enjoyment. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, we eat relishingly and enjoyably, right? Prema Dako, you eat with love and you relishingly, lovingly and happily eat what Krishna has provided. Of course, certain health conditions, this thing, that thing, people have to make adjustments. I'm not getting into every minutia of what kind of food and all that. But in general, if one eats happily, then one understands that one will naturally have some range by which they will stop. And the idea is, if we do overeat, and there are examples. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are ample examples of overeating. They've eaten like anything in festivals and situations. They've relished so much food that they can't move and all that. But you also find pastimes right after that of some heavy physical activity that they've done to digest it all. And so if you see, Prabhupada kept all his disciples busy. And so busy that those were not major issues. Of course, I'm not talking of ill health. I'm talking of, in general, if good health is there, then food and physical activity, when they match well, they're generally fine. And we can eat without a problem and digest without a problem. Now, another principle is, and I've tried and it has not worked for me, so I'm sharing with you. If it works for you, great. But generally the principle is that in regulating eating, it is said that if you regulate first the timing, the first regulation is only prasad, but in our case that's already a given, nothing other than prasadam. So it's the type. That is the time. If every day you eat at the same time and not make too much variations, then the digestive system is stable. So type, time, and then quantity. So what happens with quantity is many times or oftentimes, and this is why it's not worked for me, is I found that all my eating happens while talking, because we're so busy in conversations. And so what happens is we're not able to pay attention to what we're eating and how much we're eating and what's the taste like, what's the relish like. We can't. We're talking and eating. Like last night, I have noticed that in general, in my life of service, mostly I'm eating and talking. Or mostly someone else is talking and I'm eating, however it is. But I'm eating while... So my attention on food is not the same. You notice pictures of Srila Prabhupada or eating prasadam? Never talk to anyone. I mean, it's a little difficult because prasadam is also a social time. But Prabhupada is very calm and quiet and would sit by the window and eat by himself. Well, then the attention is on what I'm eating and how I'm eating. I mean, it's difficult. I'm not saying it's easy. That's why I say it's not worked for me. But we are all habit persons who take things to an extreme. So from today, when all the devotees are sitting together, we'll say, I heard in class, and so we become so antisocial, we don't talk to anyone sitting next to us. That's not what I'm propagating. But the point is just how it is. We're designed. So if someone can read or we can hear something together by eating, that's another way. I found that it doesn't work for me because my life is designed such that somehow whenever I'm eating, that's the time when I get to talk to people and I don't pay that kind of attention. Now, separate from food, so sorry, long-winded answer, but separate from food is, in general, when a person carries a happy disposition, such person, whatever the situation, you know, life is full of challenges in general. But if you in general carry a happy disposition during the day, then health is good, digestion is good. Things, when you worry too much, that's the other side, then things, the whole system is in, gets out of balance. Somehow, if people are happy and satisfied and like that, problems will always be there. That is not going to go away, ever. And no one should tell us, all problems will go away. Never go away. Bhagavatam is all about problems in people's lives. Right? Is there any pastime that's all happy, happy? It's all pastimes of difficulties and challenges. But they are happy in those situations. So generally when we carry a happy disposition, my dear Kishore Kishori, I'm very happy to be in your presence. I'm very happy to be serving you. I may have so many challenges, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Overall, I'm very, very, very happy to be in your under your grace. Just the happy disposition helps a lot. You have another question? Anyone else has another question, comment? You have a question or comment on this one or a separate one? Food related?
So my question is related to your last comment and one of your previous comments. You said devotees are glorified in the scriptures when they're put into extreme conditions and they're able to tolerate. And then you also said if we have a happy disposition, and then you know everything will be swell. But the problem is that so many things could take our happiness, like you were mentioning, so many problems. And so my question is essentially that... the obstacle I'm sure we all face is that, for example, when we work a job or any circumstance, our boss may be a jerk. And so we may tolerate the provoking circumstance because if we don't, we'll lose our job. We want to punch his lights out. But then the problem is when we come home, we take our rage out on our family. That can cause dissension between family members. So even in spiritual life, when there's some disagreement, people may glorify us externally. Oh, wow, you tolerate such a provoking circumstance. But then the wife knows that, you know, my husband, he's not so great if you see him at home or vice versa. And so what are we to do, or what are some steps we could do to receive Krishna's mercy to better tolerate the provoking circumstances, not just publicly, and so we can have better relationships with the people we have to live with every day?
So therefore, all devotees should get a dog at home. And when you come home, you kick the dog. Isn't that the phrase? You kick the dog, who's just quietly lying there. You vent all your frustration on the dog. So you get a dog and kick it every day. You'll be fine. So then you don't have to yell at the wife or, you know, get anything like that. Because we are practicing devotees, there has to be some place, some safe place where we can vent. And that's all right. Because if we measure ourselves against the standard of the pure devotees, we will fail like anything. So at the sadhaka level, although we may exert tolerance in the company of devotees, in some safe company, it's okay to vent, because there's no judgment there. Yeah, we have to, otherwise if we don't vent it and we say, I'm so stoic, it will build inside to such a degree that one day in public it's going to come out like, whoa, what happened to this guy? It's complete burst. So in small, safe environments, we can vent it. And that venting will help just to say, oh, I'm so frustrated with Nityananda Prabhu today, I cannot. And you release it, and then with time, when we read Bhagavatam or whatever, our own chanting will say, okay, we'll tolerate it, it's alright, something. You know, some higher thinking will dawn on us. If we don't have to vent anywhere and we're perfectly okay because the situation didn't disturb us at all, great. Unlikely. So at some point we might say, this is very frustrating. I'm having difficulty communicating with this guy. I'm having so much trouble making myself understood or even understand. Something, somewhere where the heat of the moment is dissipated. So you can see things a little clearly. You know, when you do yagyas in a smaller room and you get the wrong kind of wood, for example, there's a lot of smoke and it's going into the eyes and nostrils, and you know. So what do you do at that time? You open the windows, you let the smoke out, right? So then you can see things clearly. So once in a while that vent is okay. What to do? There's no other way. If you try to act as if I'm, you know, the murti, the personification of tolerance, somewhere the pressure will build and it will show up in the most embarrassing way. So a little venting is okay, in a safe place though. Yeah, Jitendra Prabhu.
We expect bad behavior from the karmis because they're not in knowledge. I remember being at the airport and some old fellow came up to me and punched me. Yeah, and he was an old guy, so it didn't really hurt very much. He punched me in the face. Yeah, and we were pushing the books around and, you know, distributing in front of the devotees. And then this fella had a heart attack and fell down. And the people, you know, they didn't like us at the airport and they were blaming us. And they came up. He orchestrated. He did it. And then finally this one old lady came up and she goes, he wasn't doing anything. He was just standing there. they were going to arrest me. So, I mean, I expect that from you know, the karmis, you know, because they're in the lower modes of nature, but you don't really expect that from devotees. So when a devotee acts like that, it's a different scenario. Pardon me? Well, he's been in a cultivated atmosphere. He's been nurtured. You know, he should rise to the occasion and understand with a broader perspective that I should, you know, be more tolerant than a tree. But, you know, it looks good on paper, but, you know. another thing is, I remember in Prasadam, you know, there's this phrase in the Bible, pearls before a swine. And I had three friends come to the temple on three different occasions. One, I gave him some burfi and he spit it out. And then there was Timothy Leary, who the devotees offered prasadam, and he spit it out. And another friend came to the temple here, and we had veggie burgers, and he wouldn't eat it. And then another friend, he said, the only vegetables I eat are those that they put on my pizza. And he died of a heart attack. But, and one other thing is, in the book here, there was a devotee named Vishalaksha. And in the verse here, it's Vishalaya unto a sudra. Do you know what Vishalaksha means, Prabhu? Vishalaksha? He was a devotee in the Evanston Temple.
Is this a man or a woman? Vishalaksha. Was Vrishalaksha a man or a woman? If I'm not wrong, I will confirm, but Vrishalaksha means the eyes like that of a doe. A doe. Doe-eyed. Because does have very beautiful eyes. So they're broad, big, beautiful eyes. They're called Vrishalaksha. Vrishala is Shudra. No, Vrishalaya is unto, but Vrishala is a Shudra. Anyway, okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Ha, ha, ha.